With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
They're doing is so evil. It's almost like if you had a video game and the point of the video game was to be as evil as possible to as many black people in Africa as possible. Like, yeah. making making it so that they're, like, trying to get it so they're drinking urine and feces. That's the most insane, evil thing, man.
What's up? Welcome. Look at this fancy place.
I like it.
I hate this artwork. This is a retarded ghost woman. Isn't she?
She looks kind of peaceful.
Well, it's okay. Slow girls are peaceful.
Yeah.
They don't have much to worry about.
It's okay.
Just putting them puzzles together. That's all you got to worry about.
I am disappointed.
Broads and Dames. Dames and Broads. What are you disappointed?
Dames got Gams.
Dames got Broads and Gams.
I'm scared because we left all of our notes at home.
No, we just left one note.
No, Babylon and Dahlia.
We didn't take Babylon notes.
I did.
Oh, I didn't know you did. Okay.
And so now we're just raw dogging it from memory tonight.
Well, we can do that. I mean, we know movies well. We've been movie detectives for our whole lives, basically. So we're prepared to do it.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. And we're going to do three movies tonight that fit in this genre of neo-noir. So that would be Babylon, Black Dahlia, and L.A. Confidential. We've had so many requests, particularly from buddies of mine. Shout out to John Adams, saying, when are you going to do L.A. Confidential? It's you know, kind of a classic in this genre of neo-noir. There weren't many in the 90s like this. And then we had the 2006 or 7-ish Black Dahlia, which was another adaptation of the James Ellroy, just like L.A. Confidential. And then the most recent big, which apparently it flopped, I guess, right?
Hollywood.
80 million and it made 14 so far.
Hollywood is on Babylon. Life support right now, isn't it?
So, you know, if you guys saw the interview with Jamie Kennedy, I mean, he was like, Hollywood's dead, bro. Dude, you don't need it, man. Hollywood's dead. Or so. Hey, maybe, I guess he's right, right? I mean, not that we didn't know that. I did a podcast 6 years ago that I just shared on the community feed that we said Hollywood's dead 6 years ago. So, yeah, I agree with Jamie. Shout out to Jamie. Thanks again for that interview. Awesome interview. One of my favorites. We were just watching Scream. It's just, I don't know, man. It's surreal. If you guys would hit like and share. We're going to start off with LA Confidential. 1997. I didn't even remember this movie in 1997. I know that it was a hit, and I remember people talking about it for whatever reason, and I was a super movie buff in 1997. By the way, that's my Bill Clinton saxophone right there. Y'all want me to play saxophone later?
Yeah, try.
You want me to get a cigar?
Yeah.
Gross.
Ew.
Get it?
No. No
cigar. I will not be playing the saxophone. That's a prop, basically. It's a prop phone. LA Confidential. You get distracted with these people.
I want to see what they say.
Yeah. Now, Lost Highway is a classic. Yeah. We've done Lost Highway. We will return to Dave Lynch. We'll return to Dave Lynch very soon. We're going to do the Hollywood trilogy, Mulholland Drive, Lost Highway, and
I've never seen
Inland Empire.
I've never seen that one. Inland Empire.
You're in for a disturbing treat.
Well, that's where I'm from, so.
You're in for a disturbing treat.
I'm from the IE.
Scooter just sent me we had a good time with Scooter last night. And he sent me a clip of David Lynch putting panties in his mouth and saying words. Some kind of challenge. Can you put a panty in your mouth and say a word?
No.
Okay. Then we won't do it. If you say no, then we won't.
Yep, I'm not doing it.
L.A. Confidential.
Okay.
What'd you think? You just watched it. Had you seen it before or not?
No.
You'd never seen it?
No.
I thought you had.
It was a kind of a big hit in 1997, right?
It was a critical hit, and it did well at the box office. Everybody liked Guy Pearce, and Russell Crowe was new. Russell Crowe coming out looking like Post Malone, literally.
He looked so young and
literally
svelte back then.
Let me see if I find a young... Look. Let's find a Russ Crowe in here. Y'all remember Russ Crowe? By the way, I realize Guy Pearce, it looks like, if you look at just his mouth, he has a Val Kilmer mouth.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Okay, but here's Russell Crowe, a.k.a. Post Malone right here.
You got your Kevin Spacey also.
Nothing weird about Kevin Spacey. No. Totally normal dude, very... hip, very cool, normal guy.
Upstanding citizen.
There he is. Look at that Post Malone, dude, right there. See?
He looks so young.
What's that stupid Post Malone song? I've been freaking hosing.
Popping pillies, yeah. I feel like a rock
star. Feeling like Russell Crowe. I feel like Russell Crowe. Yeah, see? Anyway.
The year is 1953.
Which I didn't realize it was that late. I was thinking this was earlier than that. And I didn't remember all the Veronica Lake references. Like, she's referenced like 30 times in the movie because Kim Basinger's character is supposed to be a high-priced floozy lady of the evening.
SEX worker.
A floozy, a lady of the evening, a woman of ill repute who is rented out because she looks like the celeb. So you could apparently rent you a lady of the evening who was like a knockoff, mm-hmm. like a Target version of Rita Hayworth, a Walmart version of Veronica Lake.
So this movie, in the beginning, it points out that the movies back then were an advertisement for people to move to Los Angeles, and they kept on referring to it as like Paradise and Garden of Eden and these types of things. And then when we look at Babylon in a minute, that movie is all about how Los Angeles is hell. So there's very a lot of scenes where it's really hot and fires and devils. So we'll get into that in a little bit. But they're advertising Los Angeles as the Garden of Eden.
Yeah, Danny DeVito comes on. He's like, Los Angeles. And he's trying to sell it. And the idea is that it would be kind of an image of America, this Americanism of the 1950s, which is you can have whatever you want. Come to Hollywood. You can have a dream home. You can have stardom. You might get discovered, right? And so all of these girls moving out there thinking they're going to be the next Rita Hayworth, the next Veronica Lake, the next Lana Turner, they end up in bad times, mm-hmm. ill repute, right? Ladies of the evening, typical story. And this is a very noir type of thing, right? The femme fatale who's involved in the vices.
Yeah, or like the Midwest girl who's escaping her boring right. life exactly. and moving out west to become a star.
Well, that's the Kim Basinger character.
But they were also they were advertising all the good jobs out in LA, such right. as the LAPD.
Yeah, so there's an interesting overlap with organized crime and the Los Angeles Police Department. And I mean, everybody, this is like one of the most famous police departments because it became world famous, especially in the 90s Rodney King riots. And yeah. all of this idea that, oh, the LAPD is all racist.
O.J. Simpson.
O.J., right. And then this is set, though, in the 1950s when there is a TV show and you have a TV star detective played by Kevin Spacey. And his whole thing is about crafting and creating the image of this TV show called Badge of Honor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Kevin Spacey's the real cop who advises the TV show.
Right. Yeah. But he's a celebrity cop. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, like he is a cop, but he's a celebrity cop who advises the TV show.
Right.
And what I'm saying is that the narrative of California and the LAPD is crafted via Hollywood's TV show, Badge of Honor.
Mm-hmm. And then you've got the Danny DeVito tabloid man. So this movie...
Hush.
Yeah, his magazine, Hush Hush, this movie shows how all of those things are wrapped up in organized crime.
Yep.
Tabloids.
Blackmail.
SEX work.
One Nation Under Blackmail.
Yes. So, in the beginning, Guy Pearce, he's like the goody-goody. He's too good to even advance.
He's an ambitious, self-righteous, he's got a dang stick in his butt.
Yes.
I never use that phrase, but if there's ever a character that it fits, it's him in this role, right?
He's on the level. He does things by the book.
He's a man who follows every ordinance.
Yes.
And Russell Crowe is not.
And
Russell Crowe does not play by the rules.
They give you a big clue in the very beginning when James Cromwell, who's the captain, is quizzing Guy Pearce to see if he's good enough to...
what it takes to be a detective.
Advance in the LAPD. And he's like, would you shoot people in the back? He's like, of course not.
Would you plant evidence? Yeah. No way.
And he's like, see, that's why you'll never make it in this business because you have too much integrity.
Yeah, and so that's all, you know, common noir movie theme is the corrupt cop, the cop that's tempted by the femme fatale. You know, Kim Basinger is obviously playing the femme fatale here. And what I didn't realize or didn't recall, because it's been many years since I watched this, was they actually reference real organized crime figures, right? So they reference Mickey Cohen, they reference the Jewish and Italian mafia as a significant organized crime structure. So you think in the first, you know, third, the first act, you think that it's going to be an organized crime movie. And if you've not watched it, it is a great movie. You should go watch it. But it's not about organized crime. It's about the police running the organized crime. So it fits very well into, you know, Dave McGowan style thesis about what really goes on with, you know, a lot of police departments.
Well, there's a food chain. There's the Italian mafia and then the Jewish mafia above them and then the police above them.
Right. So. But in this story, it's the corrupt cops that actually move in on and push out the organized crime figures. In the very beginning, you think that it's gangland battles that are getting rid of the organized crime, but it's actually the cops that are doing it.
Yes.
And Russell Crowe's partner is one of the corrupt cops doing it, but we don't know that until later on in the story.
Right. So there's this club, this organization called the Fleur-de-Lis. And when Kevin Spacey gets one of these business cards, he calls the number. And what is it? They say, like, anything you desire.
Anything you desire. And he doesn't know what it is, right?
Yeah. Well, he doesn't know the proper call and response, so he gets hung up on. But now he has this lead, like, something
happening.
But
he doesn't know what they offer.
Right. So come to find out, what they offer is SCX workers who are cut to look like the stars.
Right.
And so you can order, like you said, your dollar store Veronica Lake or Marilyn Monroe or whoever. And even in one scene, there was like children at the B-R-O-T-H-E-L.
You can order a Shirley Temple.
Yes. And I'm not
talking about
the
drink.
Right.
Bing. Zing. bada boom, bada zing. Games and dames with games. Dames with games.
Dames got games.
The other thing we noticed is that anytime you watch a movie in this vein, you're going to hear, tell it to the boys down at the station.
Yeah. Or turn in your gun and a badge.
Yeah. Because the cops don't play by the rules. And you got to have an angry chief who demands your badge and your gun.
Yes. So what did you make? Okay, there was a massacre part of the story at this place called the Night Owl.
That's a coffee shop, but that's just to get rid of one of the corrupt cops because he had stolen the heroin from the gang, the mob figures.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just partly to cover up what was really going on.
Do you think that was any kind of reference to like a cult or Bohemian Grove or anything? The owl?
It could be. I mean, owls are not just symbolic for, you know, that kind of stuff in terms of Bohemian Grove, Minerva, the Owl of Minerva. They also are symbolic for spies because owls are birds that sit and watch. They're like spies.
Okay.
But it's not really spies in this. It's more so, I mean, you could argue that, you know, the police chief or the captain, I should say, who's really behind all this, is kind of operating in that way. I mean, he's operating as a control figure behind the scenes who's not just moving in on the organized crime. He's actually blackmailing all the politicians.
Mm-hmm.
And they're using...
Along with Danny DeVito, the tabloid man.
Along with Danny DeVito, the tabloid guy. And they're using all of the high-priced rent girls who look like the stars to do it.
Yeah, so you've got a paparazzi connection with blackmailing key figures. Russell Crowe has a serious white knight complex in this movie because he had some trauma. Did you miss that part?
Crussell Rowe.
So anytime he sees that a girl's being abused, he has to like jump in and save her. So he's going crazy seeing Kim Basinger or Veronica Lake lookalike being used by the PIMP because...
I don't know what you heard about me. But I'm a P-I-M-P.
Who
maybe the Jay-Z song.
Oh.
When you spell out P-I-M-P, it's the Jay-Z song. That's one of his songs.
What was I going to say about that? Oh, so because in his childhood, his dad beat his mom to death and chained him to a radiator and left him there for 3 days.
That turned him into a grizzled cop.
And so now he cannot abide with women being abused in any way.
It's a trigger for him.
Yes. Let's see.
Well, again, the element that I do like about this movie is that when you go back and watch it, it's really showing a lot of... I'm sorry, that's 50 Cent. Yeah. What's the Jay-Z song? Anyway, you're right. It's the 50... I got 50 Cent Jay. That's like 2001 era rap, right? But thank you, all of the rap aficionados in the audience. They're correcting me on that.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Now I'm trying to think of the Jay-Z song. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Play a little bit of the film and you can see where we're coming from with all of this. Just hit my little fancy buttons here. Look at that. Oh, still got fancy buttons. And I'm not going to play the... audio, because if I play the audio, the music will ding the freaking, you know what. But it's weird too, given, you know, what all came out with Kevin Spacey and all of his kind of weird connections and whatnot, that he's playing this role of the celebrity cop who, but he's actually a good guy in this, Kevin Spacey. He's not a bad guy. He's an ambitious, agnostic, doesn't really have any motivations character. And he does these fake busts for publicity stunts, as you see
here. He works with Danny DeVito, getting the cops to where they need to go to be in the tabloids.
Yeah. And he's like a celebrity cop. And so he just makes these busts to be in the paper to make the police department look good, right?
Yeah.
But, it's odd that, you know, he ended up 1 year being king of Davos, right? Remember?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Kevin Spacey. And I don't want to say too much about him.
Crussell Rowe.
Did you know Rolo Tomasi was a made-up name?
I had forgotten that Rolo Tomasi is from this movie. So if you are familiar with Rolo Tomasi in the Manosphere, if you've seen, you know, Michaela Peterson has had Rolo on a whole bunch. Rolo Tomasi is from this movie. And it's the name that Guy Pearce and Kevin Spacey come up with as their code word to try to identify who's really running all of the rackets behind the scene.
Well, it's the name that Guy Pearce gave his father's murderer, who he never knew who he was, so he just
called
him.
Right, but it's a made-up name.
Yeah.
And we find out who it is, and it's the captain of police.
Yes.
So, a really well-made, well-crafted... noir thriller. I can't think of anything else. Think of any other esoteric elements. One thing you'll notice when you watch a lot of these kinds of films is, I'm talking about the neo-noir, you will notice all of the references to the old noir films when you've seen the old noir films.
Mm-hmm.
Which, when this came out in 97, I had not seen in many of those. But Jamie and I have been on a kick in the last few years of really going deeper into a lot of the classic noir films, and I'd say we're probably about 50 deep into the top 100. So people are telling me, you need to watch Double Indemnity. I've seen Double Indemnity probably 5 times. So we're into the obscure, like, you know, obscure ones that nobody's seen, even the foreign ones. We've seen all of the kind of mainstream, mainline ones that you all know about. But what's interesting is that now, looking back, it's like you start to see all these references to, oh, this is Glass Key. I mean, you know, Veronica Lake, very prominent in Glass Key. You'll see the references throughout this to that, as well as her other movies. Blue Dahlia is another famous one with her. And we'll see that in Babylon and in Black Dahlia as well. What did you think? Did you notice any other parallels to recent sort of 40s? We've been kind of stuck in a 40s era lately.
Yeah, well, the movies is part of the SDX fantasy of the customers of the PIMP. And she's even playing a Veronica Lake movie. Kim Basinger is playing the movie while she's with her client. So it's part of the experience of Hollywood.
Yeah. So if you've not seen any of these, let me see. I was going to send you a clip. Maybe I forgot to send it. So, like, I'll give you an example here. We can watch one of the classics. This probably won't ding the thingamajig if I play this. Let's see. But if you're not seeing Glass Key, this is one of the classics in this genre to see that you'll find a lot of parallels to. Let's see if this works. Hopefully the music won't.
What a story. What a battle.
The Glass Key. Paramount's fast-moving story of two tough guys and a beautiful girl who gives them the fight of their lives.
Two tough guys and a beautiful girl. Just like LA Confidential, right?
And
the cops are always boxers, too, in these James Ellroy stories.
That's how it is with Black Dahlia, the same author. Those guys are boxers.
Yeah.
And Russell Crowe, he's not a boxer, but he's a puncher.
No, he's a good boxer. That's his thing.
Oh, okay.
Because he beats the crap out of all the people that... I mean, he basically punches everybody in the movie, including Kim Basinger.
Yeah.
Battle of the Sexes, starring Brian Donlevy, the great McGinty, back in politics and tougher than ever.
So a corrupt politician.
Alan Ladd, a killer in more
Alan
ways
Ladd,
than one.
He's in a million
Pitting their male
films.
Wits and strength against Little Miss Dynamite herself, Veronica Lake.
Little Miss Dynamite.
Get out of my way, you cheap crook.
The Glass Key, story of big town politics and underworld intrigue, of murder,
big town politics and underworld intrigue.
They plotted to swing an election, and a battle to the death between Alan Ladd and William Bendix, that terrific guy you saw as Maxie Randall in Wake Island.
Oh yeah, that guy.
What?
And Dashiell Hammett, of course, he did. He wrote many of these, or I think he wrote these, right? He's the writer. He did Maltese Falcon, right? If you've not seen Maltese Falcon, it's a classic. But we've gotten off into really obscure noir stuff. So Mildred, I thought Mildred was really good, right? Key Largo's a classic. If you've not seen Key Largo, most of the Lauren Bacall Bogart films are really good. And they're also in this same kind
of... How to sound more confident in your writing.
What did you like?
What was that one with them in Florida?
Key Largo. With Edward G. Robinson. By the way, Edward G. Robinson is going to come up because Edward G. Robinson was in various Fritz Lang... Well, he's in Stranger, the Fritz Lang surrealist film. Fritz Lang, of course, did Metropolis and is connected to the circles of people... in the Black Dahlia milieu. So I'm not saying Edward G. Robinson did the Black Dahlia, but I'm saying that he's friends with the people in that milieu. Did you find your Black Dahlia notes?
They're here all along.
Don't make soy faces. Only I'm allowed to make soy faces.
Okay, I'm happy now.
You found your notes?
Yeah.
Okay, is that both of them?
No, just Black Dahlia.
Oh, okay. But yes, Key Largo was great. You know, the thing about a lot of these older 40s films is that they're really good, but in a very different way. They're star-driven. That was something very big, you know, in the basically all the way up until the modern period. It wasn't until about the 60s and 70s where they really started shifting to the movies being more so not star-driven, but story-driven.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the older films I've noticed, there's hardly any symbolism. There's sophisticated plots, but it's like sophisticated in the sense of, you know, like people cheating on each other and running crime rackets. It's not sophisticated in a symbolic sense, or they're not dealing with any, you know, heavy philosophical concepts until you get to certain things like, you know, the Seventh Seal or something like that. which is foreign. But, you know, Hollywood is not doing that. Hollywood is pushing these, you know, epic star-driven tales, which they're interesting and they're fascinating in their own way. What do you think?
What was that one with Humphrey Bogart? And they were on a boat, and it was about the insurance, life insurance scam.
Oh, that's not Dark Passage, is it?
Yes.
No, Dark Passage is the one where he is getting facial reconstruction.
Oh, that was weird. Yeah. So that one started...
To Have and to Hold, I think is what you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah. The one where he got the plastic surgery.
Dark
Passage. The first third of the movie is told from the point of view of Humphrey Bogart.
And you don't see his
face.
Who
doesn't look like right. that yet, so they can't show him. So I thought that was pretty creative.
I think it's Dark Passage. Let's make sure. But yeah, this one is one of the few that's kind of weird. Let's see if that's it. Yeah, I think so.
Trailers back then sucked.
By the way, Big Sleep, if you've never seen Big Sleep, it's also one of these that LA Confidential and the others are really pulling from. Particularly when we get to Black Dahlia, when Josh Hartnett goes to the place where they're filming corn movies.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Look at this. And I put this in my first book, by the way, if you guys haven't read the first book. This actually comes up in that. So if you've not seen Big Sleep, this is a necessary watch in this genre. 1946. The 40s were all about this, man. It was just dames and gams and, like, crime. Man.
Broads.
That's all it was.
Yeah.
And let's see. So, yeah, he's got to track down the daughter of a colonel who is in corn movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it'll show it in the trailer, but where he goes, this hideout here, and let you see that. So the camera that's filming the corn is blackmailing people. It's in the head of the Buddha there,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And you'll notice that it's the scene, it doesn't show it, but the bed is very similar to the scene in Black Dahlia that we're going to look at. Mm. So Black Dahlia was pulling from this movie totally. Because you remember when Josh Hartnett goes and finds where they're filming the corn?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's pulling from this movie.
Okay.
Like, it looks exactly like it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's do Black Dahlia. Man, okay. I'm getting hot in here. This stupid thing.
2006 movie.
This was a Brian De Palma, which you thought you would think, okay, this is going to be, you know, a hit. This was a big flop. I'm not sure why it was a flop, because it's not a terrible movie. It just kind of has a weird ending. And this is based on Elroy's, like, 1987 novel, Black Dahlia. So it's prior to Hodel's version, where he's trying to... What am I doing? He's arguing that it's his dad, if you're not familiar with this book, Steve Hodel.
That's a crazy story.
Yeah. And he has a really good argument that it is. A lot of other people think that it is too. But Elroy's book was written prior to that. However, there is references in the movie. I've not read James Elroy's book, so I can't say. But there's references to stuff that definitely overlaps with the chapter in Dave McGowan's Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon on this. And I'll get Jamie to read this here in a little bit. But let's talk about Black Dahlia, the movie.
Okay.
And what do you think about it?
Well... Mobster Mickey Cohen shows up in this movie too.
Does he?
Yeah.
I don't remember that. What do they say about him?
They just reference him.
Just in passing?
Yeah.
Is it early on?
Yeah.
Let me think.
So, this is set in 1947.
Mm-hmm.
And the Zoot Suit Riots.
Oh, yeah. It starts out with the Zoot Suit Riots, remember which that? I'd never heard of that. I didn't know what that was.
Zoot Suit
Although
Riot.
I know the song. Riot! Throw back a bottle of beer. Zoot Suit Riot.
Riot! Remember when swing was real big in the 90s?
Yes, it made a comeback. Yeah. And you had Cherry Poppin' Daddies and who else? But yes.
So Josh Hartnett and Aaron Eckhart are boxers.
And cops.
Mr. Fire and Cop Mr. Boxers. Ice and buddies. So bestie.
Fire and Ice.
Bestie boxer cop right. buddies. Okay, the one thing I was kind of disappointed. I know this is based on a novel that just took the Black Dahlia story and made a story around it. But I would have liked to see more of her story, because it was nothing about her. The murder was just kind of the stage for the drama of Josh Hartnett and Anne Eckhart.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't a movie about, what was her name? Elizabeth Short?
Elizabeth Short, who is the Black Dahlia ritual murder case. This one's important because it's a ritual murder case that was real. Right.
Yeah. Scarlett Johansson's in this.
Mm-hmm.
And for such a stacked movie, it should have done better. But I think people expected to hear Elizabeth's story, and you didn't.
Yeah, they had to invent these, you know, grizzled cop figures, to go into this genre,
mm-hmm.
right? And so it's not about her. But of course, you know, this book by Steve Hodell was not out at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were fewer theories and writings on who was behind the Black Dahlia. But what's interesting is that since the Steve Hodell thing and other people have tied in the notion that it was a group that was involved in serial killings. So it was a cult. And some people think that it was the Brotherhood of Saturn,
mm-hmm.
which was a real cult that might have been involved in this because of the connections to people like the Hollywood scene. John Huston was in the circles of George Hodell. George Hodell was famous because he went to trial for INCEST with his daughter, Tamar, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or Tamara, or whatever her name is. But do you want to read that? Can you read this? It's too dark for me to see. Can you start here?
In 1958, while future husband John was vacationing in war-torn Cuba, Michelle found a new mother figure in 23-year-old Tamar Hodell. Tamar's father, Dr. George Hodell, was described by Vanity Fair in December 2007 as the most pathologically decadent man in Los Angeles.
So basically the Crowley of L.A.
And the city's venereal disease czar and a fixture in its A-list... What is that word? Demi-monde. Okay. Also noted in the article was that George Hodell shared with Man Ray a love for the work of Marquis de Sade and the belief that the pursuit of personal liberty was worth everything. In other words, Hodell embraced that all-purpose Luciferian creed, do what thou wilt.
Yep.
According to the same article, Tamar and her siblings had grown up in her father's Hollywood house, which resembled a Mayan temple, and was designed by Frank Lloyd Wright's son, and was the site of the wild parties in which Hodell was sometimes joined by director John Huston and photographer Man Ray. The luxurious home reportedly features, among other amenities, a subterranean walk-in vault, which is always a nice thing to have around. Within the walls of that singularly odd Hollywood Hills home, which lies about 3 miles due east of the mouth of Laurel Canyon.
Here it is. Look at it.
Whoa, dude.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
That looks like a horror movie.
Well, it is a horror movie.
Okay. Tamar has talked of how she often uncomfortably posed nude for dirty old men. Man Ray and had once wriggled free from a predatory John Huston. Her own father, not so shockingly, had committed INCEST with her. When I was 11, my father taught me to perform oralsex on him. Her father also plied her with erotic books, grooming her for what he touted as their transcendent union. Ew, that's just like society.
It is, but, you know, these are individuals who, again, presumably were involved in occult stuff, right? So if you look at the art of Man Ray, and again, this is way ahead of its time in terms of what's avant-garde. Most of it involves dissections of the ladies. Which one?
This one.
Right.
Gross.
So it's like parts and butts. Yeah. And a lot of the ones that deal with the parts are the reasons that people point to him being perhaps involved in this circle behind the Black Dahlia, mm-hmm. right? And so I have another book that theorizes this and gets deeper into this. It's called, it's called Exquisite Corpse. And this is a book that focuses heavily on the surrealist art element behind the murder case and the figures, the artwork of Man Ray and Dolly. Not saying Dolly was behind it, but you'll notice, a lot of it deals with dissecting ladies. In terms of the artwork, right? Not literally, although it may be literal. So let's see, I can't show that one, but let's see.
Do you try remember to find that movie, Boxing Helena?
Mm-hmm. So here's Hodel with his statue to one of the demons, like one of the pagan gods. Who is it? I can't see. And the photo's by Man Ray. Man Ray did a lot of photography.
George Hodel appears with a small statue of Yamantaka.
Who's Yamantaka? Yamantaka.
Sculptural variations of Yamantaka picture the deity engaged in sexual union with a consort.
So it's sex magic is what they're doing, right? But there's a specific piece of art that is a Man Ray photograph called the Minotaur. And that's what people usually point to say, hey, this has some sort of connection to the case.
I wonder if these people had any influence on Anton LaVey, because he was all about this.
Probably. Here's the Minotaur you can see here.
And it's just a torso.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, it's a theory, but what's interesting is that there's a network of the people who were in whose circles. And it shows Edward G. Robinson. Where is it? I can't see.
Right here. Actors.
Okay. Who are the actors? I can't read it.
Paulette Goddard, Vincent Price, Fanny Bryce, and Edward G. Robinson.
Okay. Fanny Bryce, Vincent Price, and Edward G. Robinson we know of. And they were friends with who?
John Huston.
Who was friends with?
George Hodel.
Okay. So, and then they were also friends, they were all friends with Man Ray as well. See?
Yes.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And Lloyd Wright is on
here.
Who
built their house.
Or right. His son did.
That's the son of Frank Lloyd Wright.
Oh, okay.
Lloyd Wright's the son.
Okay.
I think.
Diego Rivera is wrapped up in these people.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the same circles. The husband of Frida
Kahlo. Yep.
Who else?
So all of the avant-garde art of this time is basically these circles of people.
So, like, it kind of shows you the Elizabeth Short and all her, the people that she knew.
Well, it's unclear, I think. So it does
she
show
was
she
was friends
knew.
With Lillian Lenorak, who was friends
right.
with George Hodel.
Yeah.
And Dorothy Hughes. Dorothy Hodel.
Yeah, but we don't know if... they knew each other per se. Anyway, the point is that here's the chart.
The conspiracy chart.
the chart of who knew who, right? For get your cork board out and your string, and you can tie all this together in this very obscure book. I don't even remember where I found this, but I found this book at a bookstore somewhere when I was first beginning to consider this. And then I think there used to be a website. I don't know if it's still available, but it was somebody's thesis connecting it to the Brotherhood of Saturn. Hmm. Let me see if that website still exists. I don't know if it does, but which was a real cult in LA at the time. Yeah, here it is. No, I guess they were based in Germany. Let's see, the Brotherhood of Saturn is a German Thelemic order. Did they get to LA? Germany.
Well, for some reason,
Order of the Solar Temple. I think that's the one that is that the one that makes its way into LA. Go ahead. What?
For some reason, they made Josh Hartnett's dad German, like a Nazi.
Oh, he's a German that has. Yeah.
Well, they didn't say
he has dementia.
It's right after World War II, 1947. So this would have been like 2 years after that. It ended, but for some reason, Josh Hartnett's dad has got dementia, and he's a German-speaking guy.
Okay, all I get is a stupid metal band. I don't want. I don't care. This doesn't even work anymore, right? Like, you used to be able to pull up Brotherhood of Saturn and Black Dahlia, and now I just get that stupid metal band, the Black Dahlia Murder. Anyway.
So in the beginning of the movie, Josh Hartnett, the boxer, they try to make him throw a fight for money, and he won't do it. So they're hinting that sports are rigged, fights are rigged,
right?
Everything is already bought and paid for.
You could just watch movies, and here we go. You could figure out the world by just watching movies. Like, you don't even have to spend all your time in books. I mean, I'm not saying do that, but mm-hmm. Is that it? This is that stupid video game.
Oh.
Why is there a video game? This drives me nuts. Oh, they can't see this anyway. Well, they're not missing anything.
So, Aaron Eckhart and Scarlett Johansson are a couple, except they're not married and they mm-hmm. don't sleep together because Aaron Eckhart doesn't...
Well, we don't know it yet.
We don't know why. In the beginning. But Aaron Eckhart, Josh Hartnett, and Scarlett Johansson become this weird throuple. Chased throuple.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Of frustration. And they are looking for a child R-A-P-I-S-T.
Mm-hmm.
Is one of their cases.
Right.
Right? And then the body is found while they're on some other case. There's a shootout behind the pet store mm-hmm. is where they find Black Dahlia. And they are saying that the pet store is also the H-W-H-O-R-E house.
Yes, where it's a front.
Yeah,
it's a front, yeah.
Where they find her body in the back.
Mm-hmm.
She was displayed like art and not hidden.
Mm-hmm. There, so you can see she's out in the middle of the, or right by the road.
They put her shoes on top of a trash can.
Yeah.
They weren't trying to cover up anything. Another genre of movies that we're interested in or getting interested in now is German Expressionist.
Well, I've talked about that in my first book. I mean, Metropolis is a German Expressionist film.
But
so, Nosferatu, Cabinet of Caligari.
The Laughing Man?
Yes, which comes up in this. Black Dahlia, yeah.
So maybe we can watch some of those, like Cabinet of Dr. Caligari mm-hmm. and some other... They looked interesting. I think the art in that is just really fascinating. And also, we noticed that Tim Burton derives a lot of his imagery from...
Caligari is just straight up... I mean, Edward Scissorhands is just directly from the Cabinet of Caligari.
Yeah. So she was displayed like art. Her organs were removed, like her ovaries and things like that.
Well, it's ritual murder is the point, right? And it's pretty obviously a ritual murder. I mean, you know, other cults remove the things that this cult, presuming as a cult, did.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
She in the movie, she was making P-O-R-N-O-S.
Mm-hmm. Just like in The Big Sleep.
They have some T-R-A-N-S characters, Katie Lang.
And she's not that. She's just gay.
She's in the gay bar.
Right. And so there's a giant gay bar, which, by the way, didn't exist in 40s?
47.
Yeah. There's no giant famous gay bar in 1947.
That didn't exist. But say that in Babylon also.
There were underground clubs and parties and that is referenced in Babylon. But in the Black Dahlia, they just like go to this giant, huge, fancy club and it's like, oh yeah, this is the lesbian bar. No, that would have been way more underground. You wouldn't have this big, giant, fancy club like that.
Yeah.
But that's where he basically tracks down Hillary Swank, who comes from this elite family. And wouldn't you know, the elite family is involved in a ritual murder.
And Hillary Swank is always dressing herself up to look like Black Dahlia. And she even said, there was a scene where she said, I slept with her to find out what it's like to sleep with someone that looks like yourself.
Right, and then we know later on it's that she has been abused by her dad. So this could be a reference to Hodel and daughter.
Tamar, right.
But I've not read this Elroy novel, so I couldn't say.
Babylon, Black Dahlia, and Babylon, Berlin all have these cross ESS characters.
Well, Babylon Berlin is a noir, is neo-noir.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
because Geryon is a detective.
A singing lesbian in a, like, tuxedo. Mm-hmm. So.
Who was in that, in Babylon Berlin, was the Russian spy.
Right.
Right. And so, if you've not seen Babylon Berlin, it's actually, it takes place in Weimar Germany during all of this kind of haze of corruption and degeneracy and economic collapse. It's a really well done show. They're going to do, I think, a new season of it. But in that, Geryon is the traumatized detective who comes out of World War One. Yeah, he was traumatized from World War One, and he's being mind controlled by a psychiatrist. So if you've not seen my Babylon Berlin breakdown, go watch the whole 2-hour stream I did breaking it down. Mm-hmm. Very, very deep, a lot of symbology in Babylon Berlin. Even by the end of, I think, season two, yeah, it ends with these transhumanist references. Mm-hmm. And that's important because in the cults and there's a satanic cult in Babylon Berlin as well, that those are the circles behind things like Metropolis, where you have, let's see, the pentagram, the inverted pentagram, right? Mm-hmm. We talked about this on Clyde Lewis last night.
Yeah, I mean,
that brings about.
You said back then they didn't have a lot of symbolism, but these expressions.
The only ones that did were movies like this.
Yeah.
But this is German expressionism. This isn't Hollywood.
Right.
Hollywood was driven by. Yeah, look at this, right?
Yeah.
So this is when they create the AI woman.
I just think these movies
underneath
are so
the giant pentagram, right?
Cool. Like, these are way cooler than any CGI.
But Fritz Lang is in the circles of these people, right?
Yeah.
Because he's friends with Edward G. Robinson, who's friends with this crew that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if Fritz Lang was a Satanist or whatever, but what's amazing about Fritz, it didn't show the freaking pentagram.
It
almost does. But that's the mad scientist. So you can see she's underneath at the base of the pentagram, right?
Yeah.
See that?
Yeah.
When they create the AI. Mm-hmm. So here you have in 1927, you know, German expressionism basically expressing transhumanism 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what the film is about. Let's see. Here's a colorized. This is when, and they don't they call her Babylon when she starts dancing? And they reference the text from Revelation. So watch this. Remember this when she
yeah,
starts
she's
dancing?
Yeah, the WHORE of Babylon.
Yeah, and
from
when she dances,
the beast and everything.
This is weird because it's colorized. I've never seen it colorized.
Yeah, oh look, they're black.
It's a bronze sea, yeah.
Rotwing.
And they're going to show the references to the apocalypse. You guys can see it. Yeah. Yeah, M, by the way, is about a serial killer who's killing kids. So.
So we do know for a fact that these movies influenced Anton LaVey because he
yes.
was over there at this time with his uncle
right.
learning about this stuff.
And so that's Babylon, right? Mm-hmm. And then she dances. And then where's the part where it shows the preacher's preaching and they quote the book of Revelations, right?
Yeah. She comes on the beast with seven heads.
Yeah, right? I put this on in my second book at the end.
Lustful frenzy.
Mm-hmm. And she drives them all crazy.
Yep.
Look at that. Eliminate confirm.
Whoa, dude.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
They're going nuts. A weird dance.
It's very bird-like.
Yes, it is.
And creepy, too.
Yeah, here's the apocalypse.
Poor Fritter.
Right here. The preacher's preaching. Yeah, and here you can see it's the Whore of Babylon. Die große Babylon. Die große. Gross. So I don't know. I don't remember gross as whore. There's the beast with seven heads. Gross is whore in German.
I don't know.
Grossa.
I thought it was
Die Grossa. It's big?
I don't know. It is big.
Why did it say it's the big hoe of Babylon? I'm sure somebody in the audience knows German. This looks
Let's see the chat. Are they
creepy in color? Look at that.
Ooh.
Death. What's Grusa? Grusa is large. What's anyway? Yeah, if you've never seen Metropolis, it's a must see. I mean, it's.
Well, I talk about this one a lot in my all-seeing AI talk, mm-hmm. our live talk.
You know, I used to be really good at the bone flute. Can you play the bone flute? Isn't that a dumb penis joke?
Oh yeah. the cop, or Aaron Eckhart, he's kind of like a ambiguous cop in this, just like Kevin Spacey.
Oh, let's go back to where are we at?
Black Dahlia. Yeah. So Aaron Eckhart has a soft spot for the used up ladies.
Just like Crussell Rowe did.
Yes.
Yep. Here's this Katie Lang club, right? Which I'm pretty sure that didn't exist in 1947.
But Aaron Eckhart also has some like backdoor dealings with bad people dealing mm-hmm. with H, just like in L.A. Confidential.
With H.
H, yeah, H E R O I N.
Oh, heroin.
Yeah.
I think you can say that. Oh. We're not advocating it. We're talking about. So you're saying Aaron Eckhart was involved in dealing drugs in the movie? I don't remember this.
Well, that's what he got killed by Hilary Swank when he went to a meeting with his drug dealer people, and then she took that as an opportunity to kill him. Remember?
Yes. She cuts the rope or the thing with the guy choking him.
Yeah.
Who's the gardener, the creep gardener, right? And then he falls over the balcony and mm-hmm. smushes his face. Yeah.
And her dad is a real estate tycoon who has been building cheap houses. He made his fortune by buying the lumber from old sets and building houses that were rotting.
So he's running already. He's running a racket.
So.
All these movies are running rackets.
Even the foundation of, like, the houses right under the Hollywood sign
uh-huh.
is rotting from the beginning.
Yeah, it's symbolic.
Yeah. Yeah.
The whole thing's rotting.
So they're, like, a miserable rich family. She is just, like, a hoe for no reason. Like, just to do it.
Well, it's because of her creep dad who's creeping on her.
So her creep dad made her hoey.
Yep.
And she just does it just because... That's all she knows.
Well, the theme of a lot of these old noir and neo-noir is the corruption that's underneath, you know, the seedy underbelly that's really running the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes to full fruition in Babylon, because Babylon is not the movie you think it is. It's actually a movie about the destructive nature of Hollywood. And in my view, the way it ends is like it's like the end of Hollywood.
Well, the director of that movie said that it was a poison pen letter to the industry, but a love letter towards the art form.
Yes, that makes sense. By the way, I want you to read some more of the Hodel part.
Uh-huh.
Can you read? Because this keeps going for here and then the rest of the... So read that.
So Hodel, I-N-C-E-S-T with her daughter, says, mm-hmm. To the girl's horror, she became pregnant at the tender age of 14 with her father's child. To her greater horror, she says, my father wanted me to have his baby. A friend, nevertheless, took her to get an A-B-O-R-T-I-O-N.
She's reading from Dave McGowan's section on this, and George Hodel was an A-B-O-R-T on the download doctor.
Mm.
Which fits with the Luciferian theme, by the way.
Dr. George was so incensed that, according to Tamar, he struck her on the head with his pistol, prompting her stepmother, who also happened to be John Huston's ex-wife, to assist her in going into hiding. George Hodel was arrested and charged with, among other things, offering his young daughter to several friends at an ORGY, the sensational 1949 INCEST trial featured a witness who took the stand to describe being hypnotized by Hotel at a party.
Mm-hmm. Of course, John Huston is Angelica Huston's dad, right? From and John Huston of a million different movies, Treasure of Sierra Madre, Chinatown.
Oh, listen to this. Allegations that the rich and powerful were dabbling in INCEST, hypnotism, PEDOORGIEs, and Luciferian philosophies must surely have been shocking to Angelinos in the 1940s, as they would still be to most Americans today. Perhaps that is why the jury chose not to believe Tamar and instead acquitted Dr. Hodel. Of course, it should probably be factored in that Tamar was roundly vilified by both the Jerry Geisler-led defense teams and the local press. He was and is still today a prime suspect in the Black Dahlia murder case.
Oh, that one suspect was Orson Welles for a while.
It says there have been, to be sure, numerous suspects identified, including actor-director Orson Welles, but George Hodel does seem to be a much more likely suspect than most of those who have been identified.
So this other interesting Edward G. Robinson movie that Fritz Lang directed is worth watching too, because it's kind of a weird, surrealist thing. Is I think it's called Stranger. It's the one about the picture. I think you fell asleep when we were watching this, but yes.
Ooh, that's creepy.
That's not it. It's not M.
Well, let me read this while you're looking.
It's not Blue Gardenia, which I thought was kind of boring, but let's see.
Virtually all investigators of this case have made it assuming that there is only one culprit. It is entirely possible that Hotel committed the crime in conjunction with various others in his Luciferian social circle. Photographer Man Ray, for example, is a compelling suspect given that the posing of Miss Short's body appeared to mimic the Minotaur, one of his better-known photographs.
Woman in the Window. That's what I'm looking for. Not the Stranger. Yeah, so Dave ties it into, you know, the theory that they're not in weird scenes, but in Program to Kill, that a lot of the serial killers seem to be more than one. And by the way, that was the plot of Scream.
Oh, yeah.
We just watched Scream. Yeah. And in perfect Dave McGowan fashion, I've forgotten. Well, it's two guys, right? And the serial killers are often working in pairs, right?
Yeah.
So Woman in the Window is interesting, though, because this is Fritz Lang's Edward G. Robinson movie about a painting. The guy sees a painting, and he's enamored with this babe in the painting. And then she comes to life, and he gets wrapped up in this huge drama. I won't spoil it for you because it's a pretty good movie. But, yeah. But the theme is surrealism, and a lot of these people are into surrealism because I read another thing about the surrealists in this period. They were in love with the idea that the waking state and the dream state seamlessly transitioned. And if you believe that, then you weren't responsible for any of your actions. So if you raped and murdered and killed people, I mean, the waking state is no different from the dream state. So that's all just dreams, dude.
Well, another thing that people gloss over is, like, all these people were on drugs, like, with a capital D, and getting them from doctors and just popping pills all day long. That's part of Babylon.
Yes.
Right? As soon as you walk on the set, they're handing you pills inside of drugs. Peanuts.
Well, there's a character who's, like, Dr., you know, the drug guy.
Yeah.
For the whole thing, right? Like, he's always there throughout.
Did anybody get anything done? They're on pills and, like, booze all the time.
Maybe they were on the pills like Elvis was. Like, you take the upper, and then you take the downer.
Yes.
The upper in the morning and the downer at night.
And they're drinking all day. Like, they walk into somebody's house, and the drinks are out on the cart all ready to go. It's like a whole generation of alcoholics.
They must have all been alcoholics at this time, right?
Yeah.
Like, everybody's smoking and drinking every time they walk into a room. It's like the first thing you do. I've walked into the room. Where's my cigarette? And where's my toddy, right?
Yeah.
Give me a hot toddy. But, yeah, I do recommend Woman in the Window. It's actually a really good movie.
So, you know who I like?
No.
The Little Man.
Peter Lorre. Yeah. Rick.
And the Fat Man.
Sydney Greenstreet.
He's always like a greedy, corrupt guy.
Yes, most famously from Maltese Falcon, where they play the characters they always play. Right. So if you've never seen Maltese Falcon, I recommend it. It's also really good in this genre.
Oh.
And one thing I didn't notice until the last time I watched Maltese Falcon is that Peter Lorre's character, they couldn't talk about it this time, but he's a Skittles man. Clear as day.
Oh, yeah. What was that one about the...
Watch.
The little
chicken. Look, he smells it.
Quick, darling, in with him.
Oh, yeah. He's got perfume on his cot.
You come in, Mr. Cairo.
Why you got a perfume cot there?
Oh, Rick.
Is he supposed to be Ren from Ren and Stimpy?
Maybe. I mean, he's mocked in Looney Tunes all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Can I do for you, Mr. Cairo?
May a strange offer condolences for your partner's unfortunate death?
Yes, nice. Rick.
He's also the main... He's the serial killer in Fritz Lang's Inn. That's the kid killer.
Dear Mr. Speed, as the newspapers imply a certain relationship...
Who what?
What was that movie about the, like, Chinese goddess that gives you wishes? It was three.
The Three Strangers.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yes, and so, and the fat man, and that was
how to sound off. More cop.
The fat man. The fat man and the little man.
They
right?
build him as that, like in the previews. They're like featuring all the previews. Fat man.
Come here. Come here. Come here. Come close up. That's every trailer. I don't know if I can find one or not, but. Yeah. I don't know if these old soundtracks will ding
the... Begin well, sir. I distrust a man who says wait. He's got to be careful not to drink too much, because he's not to be trusted when he does.
Anyway, it's funny because these character actors are always billed as this in all the movies. So they were... It was like... It was okay to be typecast back then, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you've never seen one of these trailers, it's actually pretty entertaining to watch. Let me see if I can find one.
There, yeah. Here.
But it has to be the trailer where he... Yeah, here it is.
Come closer. I'm going to tell you another story. Astounding, fantastic, fabulous tale of Kuan Yin, mysterious goddess of
Kuan
the Orient, behind whose inscrutable smile...
She's like the vagina goddess, right?
This evil
what it was?
Yeah.
Desperate men and women have stained the centuries with murder. But only three have ever looked behind her grotesque mask. Three strangers. Three dangerous.
Anyway,
incredible.
Three Strangers was not that great, but it had an interesting moral. Actually, it was okay. It was like it was an anti-greed moral, right?
Yeah.
Moral tale.
It was like Monkey's Paw.
Yes. All right, we got to move to Babylon.
Okay, wait.
What?
We still have Black Dahlia stuff.
What?
Hilary Swank, Miserable Rich Family, Black Dahlia Elizabeth Short was doing lesbian corn.
Corn.
That is how Josh Hartnett figures out what's going on, because they were using the same set in the movie The Laughing Man.
The Laughing Man.
The Man Who Laughs.
The Man Who Laughs, which is basically inspiration for the Joker.
Yes. And they have that clown artwork in their movie, and her face was cut like that, the smile.
Yes.
And then we were watching that stupid Prince video that he did for Batman, and he's all dressed up like Joker. So I wonder if, like, Prince had some kind of Joker curse on him, too.
The Joker curse. Yeah. So here is the Man Who Laughs, and you notice he looks here, especially like the Joker.
Yeah.
So
that's part of Black Dahlia movie.
Right.
Hilary Swank and her dad in this movie were I-N-C-E-S-T-E. They have a weird family friend, the gardener, who looked like Man Ray.
Mm-hmm.
But he was mentally not all there. But he wanted to work in the Flickers.
Yes. You can tell the Joker is definitely pulling from this character.
Yes. That's so creepy, dude. Sometimes these are scarier than modern horror movies. Anyway. Uh, They drain the blood.
Yeah, that was another element that seems to be a ritual murder feature in Black Dahlia, is having the blood drained, which a lot of bodies that are involved in ritual stuff, that's the case, because they want the blood.
Mm-hmm. So in this movie, the way they wrapped it up was that the mom of Hilary Swank and the Weird Gardener are a thing. Weird Gardener has a crush on Black Dahlia after watching her make a porn.
Mm-hmm.
Hilary Swank's dad buys Black Dahlia for the Weird Gardener, but the mom gets mad and kills her, and then they cut her up.
Well, he partly solves it because of the clown painting.
Yeah.
Right.
And... but Aaron Eckhart had figured this out, and he was blackmailing the Scottish guy, and that's how he got killed by Hilary Swank. And then Josh Hartnett killed Hilary Swank.
And goes back to Scarlett.
Yes.
So,
and there was a little subplot in this movie about like a...
she was trafficked.
A PIMP, yeah.
Yeah, so she was branded, right? Yeah. Like trafficked people get branded.
Yeah.
We saw that with Nexium. Crowley would brand his women.
Mm-hmm.
Scarlett Johansson's branded by the name of DeWitt. Bobby DeWitt, who's the organized crime figure in Black Dahlia. But yeah. So now we come to the apex here of this. By the way, I want to remind you guys, if you want to support the show, head on over to Chalk.com. Chalk is, of course, the best supplements that you can get in terms of upping your toxic masculinity. You all want the toxic masculinity that I've got, and I know the secret. I'm going to tell you the secret, and it's chalk.com, right?
Mm-hmm.
You like my toxic masculinity, don't you?
It's not toxic.
It is. That's what we want to be, toxic masculinity, no, off the charts.
It's just right.
And if you head on over to chalk.com right now and use the promo code J50, you get 50% off all of the products at chalk.com. If you want a little better discount, use 60. You just use the promo code J60LIFE, J-A-Y-60-L-I-F-E. That will get you 60% off anything in the store, and it's a recurring subscription. So you get the 60% when you use a recurring subscription, which it will bring it to your mailbox magically every month. Just put it into this machine here. Type it into this machine, and magically it will appear in your mailbox every month. Isn't that wild,
mm-hmm,
the way that works? And they have stacks for men, stacks for women, everything that you can want over there for nutrient supplementation. In terms of our diet, our diets are all nutrient deficient. So why are you not on Chalk? Everybody knows, big fan of the Tonkat Lee. It's proven to boost testosterone. There's also ashwagandha. There's also Irish moss. There's also Seven Wonders. There's also the daily, the Action Tip 1.0. There's also chocolate, great additive to your smoothie regimen. So head on over to chalk.com and support our show by supporting us through Chalk. Also, you can go over to Grand Theft World, subscribe to Richard Grove, get access to all those excellent podcasts that he's done. And I'm like the Chad Ryan Gosling. That's what I'm talking about. This is a lit crowd tonight. Chalk lit crowd. We got one measly super chat. Nobody wants to keep the show afloat. Where y'all at? Where's our big fat money bags, Daddy Warbucks? Where they at?
Hollywood is dying.
Oh, they don't want to talk about Hollywood. Everybody's sick of it. Well, head on over to Grand Theft World. Subscribe there. Head on over to Autonomy University. Subscribe there. Head on over to Richard's YouTube channel, his Rockfin, and subscribe, because they are partners of ours now. And yes, guys, good news. I'll be on Timcast tomorrow night. What do you think of that? Isn't that crazy?
Woo.
Woo. Pop, pop.
Yep.
Pop, pop. What are we going to talk about on Timcast? What are you talking about? I don't know. I guess they talk about the news. So we'll be talking about the news tomorrow night. Shout out to Timcast. Thanks for having me on. So looking forward to that. And what else? Live event. If you want to see some 5 hours of lectures and information, comedy, the link is in the show description. The live event with BG Comedy there, doing his own unique philosophy of comedy. Doesn't it make sense that the philosopher of comedy would be at the show with us in Austin? Absolutely. So if you want to come hang out with us, hang out with BG Comedy, see his material, his set, see my crazy material. By the way, there might be some secret people showing up at the Austin event. I can't say who. And no, I don't mean Lord V. I'm talking about other people. Get your tickets to the Austin event right there. It's going to be a lot of fun. February 11th on a Saturday from 2 to 7, I think. We have it for 5 hours. So, Chalk, is that all of our stuff? I think that's all the promos. Let's get to Babylon.
Okay.
Margot Robbie.
Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt, remember him? Have you seen him?
Pad Britt.
You know, a lot of people are hating on this movie. I didn't think it was that. I thought it was a flawed masterpiece, but it has some severe areas of criticism because I'm not even playing the thing where everybody can see it. So let's go back over here. You know, it kind of reminded me, I guess because Margot Robbie and Brad Pitt are in it, mm-hmm. it kind of reminded me of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the Tarantino.
So this house that they're partying at in the first act is kind of like Hearst Castle, but when you look on the floor, it says DW.
Yeah.
So I think you're meant to think it's like DW Griffith House, right?
I think you're right about that, yeah. They're all partying at this giant mansion. And it's like a giant Babylonian ball, right?
That's yeah, just going it's wild. It's a bacchanal, for right. sure. And there's like fire dancers and devils, and the imagery is very...
O-R-G-Y.
Helly looking. Big.
It's Babylon. Yeah. It's supposed to be.
Yeah.
They don't really show that. Maybe here. Okay, yeah.
The elephant poops in the first... scene.
Well, there's a lot of there are some bodily fluid references throughout the movie on purpose.
Are all the bodily
because it's supposed to show excess, right? Especially yeah. when Margot Robbie throws up like Linda Blair. It's just like spewing yeah. out, you know.
So excrement in the opening sequence, and then the bacchanalia.
The large man is getting urinated on.
That. it's very Kenneth Berger.
It's gross, but it's not gross for no reason. It's showing on purpose. No, it's not. It doesn't like. It's not a lot of nudity. It's just show. It's gross.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not really anything that's gonna like tempt you, because most of it's gross. But it's done in the right way to show. It's very New Orleans, right? It's very Mardi Gras when they're partying. Mm-hmm. I mean, they make it like Mardi Gras, right?
Mm-hmm. So this is like supposedly the golden age when they're transitioning from silent to talkies.
To talkies, yeah.
And Brad Pitt is ever the professional who's drunk all the time except for when they yell action and then he nails it, mm-hmm. right?
Margot Robbie is the girl who will do anything to get ahead. She's basically a slutty chick who transitions from silent pictures to talkies.
She's the it girl.
She's the it girl of that time. And we, if you don't know, I didn't realize this until very recently. So, it girls, that comes out of the early British scene. And there were three it girls in the 19-teens or 20s, I think. So, it was Clara Bow and it was Joan Crawford. She was actually an it girl before she was super famous Hollywood chick.
And then the girl with the bob haircut, the black bangs and the
Louise Brooks, Clara Bow, and Joan Crawford were the original it girls.
Yeah.
And so this is not a thing that started with Paris Hilton. It was a thing that comes out of British culture, oddly enough.
And there's a movie called It.
And they made a movie called It with Clara Bow because she had it. And yes. The movie is about her having it, this amorphous unknown quality.
The X Factor.
The X Factor, yeah. And then that allowed the system to then grant, oh, she has it. Mm-hmm. She's the new it girl. So it's like a marketing thing that they used, mm-hmm. right? You understand what I'm mm-hmm. saying?
Clara Bow and Hoopla.
I wanted to find that picture of all three of them because they were the original It Girls. And then everybody knows about how crazy Joan Crawford went, right? Like she went from being this, right, to turning into a woman who always played an absolutely insane psycho woman because she went psycho insane, right?
Yeah.
I mean, her, what's the Bette Davis movie where they're both
Mommy
great?
Dearest?
Mommy Dearest, right?
No, that's Sunset Boulevard.
Or Three
Boulevard.
Faces of Eve? No, it's not. She's not in Sunset Boulevard. That's Gloria Swanson.
No.
Yes, it is. I know Sunset Boulevard very well.
Bette Davis.
They're both in it.
Okay.
They're fighting each other. They're sisters.
Okay, what's the one where she's trapped in a wheelchair by her sister?
That's the one I'm talking about. Mommy Dearest, right?
No.
Or is it three? It's not Three Faces of Eve, right?
No.
Yes, it is. It's Mommy Dearest.
That's the one with Faye Dunaway.
No, it's... Oh, you're right. Being about Joan Crawford, yes. Right?
So the one where she's trapped in her wheelchair is Sunset Boulevard.
No, it's not.
Okay,
I know Sunset Boulevard very well.
Oh.
Mommy Dearest.
No. Hold on. It is...
I'll just look up Joan Crawford and Bette Davis. I mean, that's... They hated each other, right? It's not... But look how crazy she went. She went from looking like a normal person to looking like a complete like psycho. And then she just played the same psycho in every movie. So they had a famous feud.
What's that called?
This is about their legendary feud, but...
Whatever happened to Baby Jane?
Baby Jane.
Yes,
thank you. So... But Bette Davis, interestingly, according to her daughter, was a witch.
So. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So let's get back to Babylon. I gotta go be on Timcast.
Okay.
So, what happens in Babylon next?
Margot Robbie's discovered. Well, another theme in this movie is that human life is cheap and sacrificed for the sake of getting the shot. So in the scene...
Multiple people die.
Yeah. Where they're making that big, sweeping, epic, like a D.W. Griffith army
it's a battle
fight scene.
Yeah.
Somebody gets impaled.
He hires a bunch of hobos, and a hobo gets impaled.
Well, one of the crew gets impaled.
No, it's a hobo.
It was a guy who was supposed to get the camera. Anyway.
Okay.
And all they do is like, oh, well, and moving on because we got to get the shot because the light's going to, you know, there's no stopping this machine that just steamrolls over human life.
Well, that part of that, though, was that they didn't have, they had a deadline and they could only film during the day. They didn't have a way to do filming at night.
Right.
There's no light.
Well, that's why the film industry moved out west because it was too overcast on the East Coast.
Right. But so what you get, so the first flaw of this movie is that it follows too many characters for 3 hours. So you're trying to keep up with the black guy's story, Brad Pitt's story, Margot Robbie's story, and Manny, the Hispanic dude's story. And they're all trying to make it be big. And it's basically everybody fails, right? Two people make it. Brad Pitt and Margot Robbie make it. Brad Pitt's already famous. He doesn't transition into talkies, and so he ends up, spoiler
he's
alert,
the Brad Pitt of the silent era.
He suicides himself.
Yeah.
Margot Robbie makes it, gets really popular. She's the it girl, but then she ends up dying at age 27. So she makes it into the 27 Club. And she did everything she could to get to the top. She ends up, you know, in debt to drug dealers, $100,000. And Manny is the figure who has the, you know, the heart. He's the figure with a moral compass. Nobody else has a moral compass. And it almost kills Manny. Like, he barely gets out and he escapes and ends up safe with a family, right? Because this is a black hole of death that is just basically warping and destroying everything in his path.
Well, it's interesting because there's layers that they unlock. As outsiders, they think it's so glamorous when he's just a butler and she's just a nobody. Yep. So they're outside looking in like, oh, this is so great and glamorous. And then they get to work and they see that it is a lot of work and it's very grueling and dangerous. Like,
people die. Yeah.
One guy got locked in the...
sound booth.
Film.
The sound booth.
Yeah, and he died of, like, overheating or whatever.
Right.
And they just have to move on and keep going. And then even down to the layer underneath of like the seedy drugs, the people that die by accident and the scandals like that, like Fatty Arbuckle mm-hmm. type Hollywood Babylon, mm-hmm. Kenneth Anger stories, mm-hmm. that's in there. The tabloids with Jean Smart. But the layers and the catabasis of the story mm-hmm. is when they meet Tobey Maguire.
Tobey Maguire, yeah, who's essentially the sort of devil archetype, yeah. And this represents the worst of the worst period as it's getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
So we're moving from talkies up into the 40s and 50s. It's getting really bad.
And so Tobey Maguire's already at some like lavish party, but he's like, "Do you want to see?"
Well, he's like a billionaire. He's like a billionaire drug dealer. Basically.
Yeah, he's giving a lavish party, but he's like, "Do you want to see what's really underneath?" So they go underground, literally, and the first level is
so
like
1940s raves, and there's giant muscle dudes eating.
Well,
rat,
that's even the
rat.
Third layer. So the first layer,
it's the layers of hell. It's Dante.
Exactly, Dante's Inferno with the different realms, and they. Make it down to the bottom where it's like strong men.
It's a satanic underbelly.
Exactly.
To Babylon, to Hollywood.
So Manny sees the entire picture behind the curtain underground.
And runs away.
And is revealed, and he almost loses his life.
Yeah, Manny sees that it's satanic. And because he's this sort of, you know, honest Catholic guy who is sincere and, you know, wants to be part of something big and wants to create art. And over this long span of finally getting to where he's being successful, then he sees that really this has a giant satanic underbelly, and he almost gets killed by Tobey Maguire and his thugs. He flees to Mexico and years later comes back to Hollywood just to visit with his wife and kid. And then he has this scene where he watches a movie. I think it's taking place in the 1960s, late 50s, early 60s, right? Way past this period of the 30s and 40s where it was really bad. And his wife and kids go to get ice cream, and he just decides to go watch a movie. And he's like, oh, I used to work here. I used to be an important man at Paramount or whatever. And so he's watching some movie. Do you remember what it is? I don't remember what it is. This is where it gets really weird.
Singing in the Rain.
Yes, and he's noticing sequences that are referring back to movies that he worked on from the 20s and 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And he's noticing, oh, that's that story. I knew this person, right? So, and then he has this weird sort of almost out-of-body experience, or we don't know if it's Manny's experience or us, the audience, where we sort of go from Manny's perspective outside of Manny. And we pan the entire theater, and it gets really meta. It breaks the fourth wall. And we see everybody in the theater reacting to and being essentially programmed by Hollywood. And then it turns into this psychedelic sequence where we start to see, it's almost like an MKUltra drug, it's like an LSD trip, where we start to see the entire history of Hollywood. From that point on, from the 1950s on, where we move into the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and we're seeing clips of the Matrix. It's getting really weird. It's getting really psychedelic. We're starting to see things that look like, you know, 2001 Bowman going into space. We start to see the film breaking down. And then it starts to turn into flashing colors.
The celluloid.
It's almost, the cellular. And we're watching this sequence. It's almost like, it's like an LSD trip. It's a psychedelic movie experience, and it's all of the next several decades of Hollywood up until now breaking down. So the film is breaking down, literally signifying that movies in Hollywood are breaking down.
I agree. I think
it was wild.
Movie is kind of like a death knell of the industry.
But I will warn you, if you're watching that last sequence, if you're easily, be careful, because that will trigger you. I had to look away. Because I felt like I was watching
epileptic
some sort of like
warning.
Ludovico method where I'm getting like I don't even have this problem, but I'm going to be triggered and start, you know, foaming at the mouth or something. So beware of that last sequence if you do watch the film. But it was really weird, dude. Mm-hmm. That was like, what is going on, man? And so they they wanted to play with some auteur, very out there stuff with the last sequence of the movie, which is just, you don't expect this. Very strange. Be prepared for that. But it does have a significance. That's my interpretation of the very end of it. And I think they wanted people debating it and interpreting it, obviously. Anyway, what do you think?
One thing we didn't mention yet was the transition from the silent to the talkies and the involvement now of upper class New England.
Oh, they mentioned the Rothschilds. They mentioned the elites, the Eastern Seaboard elite, deciding who will be in the pictures and who will do what and what the future of Hollywood is. That was wild.
Because Hollywood was getting such a bad reputation
right.
that the rest of the world was calling it Babylon. And mm-hmm. so they're like, we need a veneer.
We'll clean it up and turn it into a propaganda thing.
Right, so we can continue or do worse things behind the scene because now we have like these family ratings. And what was that Catholic?
It's called thing? The Hays Code, right? Yeah. So this is prior to the Hays Code. But even after the Hays Code, when Manny sees the future of Hollywood in his vision or whatever it is we're seeing, I think this is towards the end of it. Mm-hmm. Everything breaks down and then it ends, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Hollywood breaks down, society breaks down. Film breaks down. It's all disintegrating and breaking down, just like the main characters, except for Manny's, their lives disintegrated and broke down.
Because he escaped. So everyone who doesn't escape ends up...
Well, the black guy escaped, but his character was kind of... wasn't really a main character.
I thought the music was the best part of the movie, honestly.
This could have been a masterpiece, except for the gross stuff. And the other part that doesn't work in this movie is that it's two different movies. The first hour and a half of this 3-hour movie is a comedy. And it was like, okay, yeah, so we're watching a comedy. That's fine. I can do with it. I can deal with this. And then it turns into the next hour and a half, it turns into this really dark, weird movie, which is fine. But I think a lot of people would find that discombobulating. It's like, well, I'm watching a comedy for the first hour and a half. Now I'm watching this really dark, almost... psychological thriller that turns into a psychedelic thing.
Well, the tone of the movie follows the actors' circumstances. So they're really happy and like exuberant and full of life in the first half because their careers are good. And then it turns tragic and scary and dark in the second half, mm-hmm. just like their lives do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that does make sense. That's probably what they intended. But I think it's just kind of bizarre. I don't mind it. I like an epic film, and this is intended to pay homage to, you know, D.W. Griffith level epics, which were hours and hours long, right? So mm-hmm. this is paying homage to that. And, it's just that it was, I don't know.
His film, what was that? Intolerance. So Intolerance mm-hmm. has this whole hours long Babylonian part to it, and the props in the set from that movie.
I said it's a comedy. It's a dark comedy in the first half because they're laughing about people dying. I know it's satirical and comedic, obviously. But the last half of the movie isn't comedic. So there's nothing funny in the last half, especially when, you know, that weird trip out scene. So people are like, you don't get it. I do get it. Go ahead. What?
The set from Intolerance is now the Babylonian courtyard in Hollywood Highland Complex in downtown Hollywood.
Right. It's a mall.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The battery's about to die, so you want to read the super chats there? 20 minutes.
Squidward Tennis Balls, $2. Great stream, Jay and Jamie. Can't wait to see you on Timcast. Hope you can. Red Pill Tim and his non-Christian friends with the tag argument in Hollywood, etc. Also, are you excited for the remake? The what?
Resident Evil 4 remake?
Oh.
Yes, the game will be fun.
You sure. Play a good Leon if you grew your hair out.
Leon! Nice.
He is growing his hair out.
16. I am growing my hair out.
Okay. Through Human Eyes, $30. Good luck on TC tomorrow. Don't give them an inch. Okay.
I don't know what, I assume we're going to be talking about the news, so I have no idea what we'll be talking about, but thank you guys so much. If you would hit like and share, leave your comments below. Tell me what you thought about Babylon, very bizarre film. Not